What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome back to Almost Famous Minute, where we're discussing the 2000 Cameron Crowe film Almost Famous, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from Watchmen Minute.
I'm Gary Roby from Infinite Cities Baseball.
Yeah. I don't think I've been able to get that out of my head since you mentioned it last week.
It's a very strange concept, yeah. And I'm a fan of the chaos that it has caused.
And I've never done any fantasy sports, you know.
Me neither. I'm not really actually much of a sports person anyway.
Nor have I done any D&D.
Oh. You know, it's funny, this does have some, like, it has some very D&D vibes because there's a lot of push and pull between the fan community and what the devs want to do. And so, like, sometimes we'll organize very strange things that the fans campaign about, and the devs will run with it. And, like, it's fun. It's a good time. People should check out Baseball.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming back this week, like I said.
Yeah.
This is minute 73 now, which starts with Elaine threatening Russell and ends with a Stillwater huddle.
Yeah. I like Elaine in this minute.
Yeah, right. She has her kind of two roles. She goes from the finale to this buildup of her being really mean, kind of, uh-huh. You know, really. Yeah, I mean, this you know, the compromised. He's not ready for your world of compromised values and diminished brain cells that you throw away like confetti. I mean that's like the most highfalutin, you know, diss.
Really? Just like, did you just...
And the way she looks at that point, too. I mean, if Russell had actually been in the same room in her at that point, which they are in the same room much, much, much later in the movie. But thankfully, you know, at that point, you know, William's home, you know, William, you know, she's not going to be acting that way anymore. Because, you know, he's turned out okay. He's gotten back home and...
He's safe. It's gone well.
Yeah.
But yeah, she gets through this, and she asks him, "Am I speaking to you clearly?" Yeah. And I love Russell's like, "Yes, ma'am."
Yeah, he kind of like raises the phone, like the mouthpiece end of the phone has like dropped while this has been happening.
Uh-huh.
And when she asks him that question, and he gives her the yes, ma'am. You know, he gets it back up to his mouth. And, mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, maybe it's kind of. You know, he's kind of trying to be a little more quiet because he doesn't want to, you know, let anyone else know that he's actually becoming subservient to her.
Yeah.
To this other person on the phone, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. But
yeah, she's absolutely dominating the conversation now. And you can see it in just the way he's carrying himself.
And I don't know if you've ever... If, you know, this could have been such an interesting, you know, only one side of the, you know, only Russell, you know, hearing it. But then we'd miss out on that great, you know, diss that I said, you know.
Yeah.
But there's actually this one older comedian, which actually he was appearing a bit like every other season, roughly maybe on The Big Bang Theory. Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
For a younger guy like you, I know Bob Newhart.
That
would be the thing that I think the most... But when I was a kid, like, you know, 80s and even before that on reruns from his 70s show, you know, he had a 70s show and an 80s show and a 90s show, all different. But even well before that, you know, he was a stand-up comedian in the 60s. And he would do these wonderful one-side-only phone conversations that, you know, this is totally off the wall here, phone conversations with... historical people that were around before, you know, before the telephone was invented. But he'd make it fun, you know. That's one weird aspect to it. But then just what he would say on just this one side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you can sort of extrapolate, yeah. Fill in the blanks.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
To what yeah, that
it's wonderful what your mind can do, in other words, you know. So,
yeah.
But I don't think anything could have been, you know, what Cameron Crowe gives her to say, you know, because even before what I said already, she, you know, it ends with her saying, I know all about, you know, continuing on to this minute, I know all mm-hmm. about your Valhalla decadence. And, you know, I mean, that's just something that's coming a lot more to my purview as to what that really is, between like Led Zeppelin, I think, a bit, you know.
Yeah.
With you know their Immigrant Song and that was even then used in the other thing that you know, Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly mentioned at least Valhalla once, I'm decadence. Sure, in the movies. The Marvel movies. Because the Valhalla Wikipedia page clearly says in Norse mythology, mm-hmm. you know, it's a majestic, enormous hall located in Asgard, ruled over by the god Odin.
It's decadence and plenty. Yeah. I like the image it conjures.
It's the Viking's death. Death heaven location.
Right? Basically it's like the yeah, warriors go to just celebrate and eat and drink and be merry through the rest of their I was gonna say the rest of their days, but like it's afterlife an afterlife. Yeah.
they heavily eternity. Believe and there's something there and that's a reason to not worry about dying on the battlefield.
Whatever. That was the only way you got in, right? To Valhalla was like death on the battlefield.
Well, and I think the other thing is it actually referenced also then in Mad Max Fury Road? You know, they're definitely it's definitely the same idea.
Yeah.
If they don't actually mm-hmm. say Valhalla, I'd be surprised. But even if they aren't, it's so much the same idea.
It's that same
that,
idea.
That what's his name? I need to watch that movie again. It's been a little while.
From Fury Road, right? And Morton Joe.
Yeah, Morton Joe. Yeah. All I could think of was Toe Cutter.
Yes.
Same actor. But yeah. Then. You know, then she really gets into this, you know, this veiled threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you will meet the voice at the other end of this telephone. It will not be pretty.
This reminds me of my mother.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. In just that same sort of like, there's almost a like a Hulk sort of like, you won't like me when I'm angry kind of attitude here. It's Mother Bear protecting her cub, right? Mm-hmm. Which I appreciate. I like, you know, she gives him that moment again. Do we understand each other? Uh-huh. Where he's like, yes, ma'am. And then she softens too.
Exactly.
She refers to it. She says, I didn't ask for this role, but I'll play it. And just the like, you know, it's not his fault that William wants to be a journalist and wants to follow this band. Like, it's not, he's not the bad guy that she's like making him. Mm-hmm. It's just a like, I need you to protect my boy, you know? But I like her softening and being like, go do your best.
Is it kind of like alongside him, around him, around Russell, who she's talking to, the one channel she has at this point, the seemingly most friendly possibly to William, you know, and William most friendly to him because he worships him, supposedly.
Well, it's interesting. Do you think that Elaine like knows about like the dynamics, like how, I don't know how much of these conversations they have.
Oh my God. There was the one time when that we've already gone over, but you know, I mean, when, Sapphire answers the phone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is this Marianne with the pot? No,
but
this
like
is William's mother.
You know, we don't see it, so I don't know if William has explained that, like, oh yeah, like Russell's the person that I've been like talking to the most, or like he's the one he gets along with. Like, I don't know if she understands those dynamics. It just happens to be he's the one that she's talking to that has formed this rapport, which is interesting. This conversation would be entirely different if one of the other band members had picked up the phone.
Yeah. It would have been very short if it was Ed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
he'd be shaking his head, and it would have been a silent standoff, because there was that basically period where she was silent as well, until he got her to say something.
Would not have broke, yeah. That's so funny.
So she then says, she says this quote, "Be bold and mighty, forces will come to your aid." And she says, it's Goethe. It's the OE apparently changes to R, adds an R to it. Because my boss, I'm half German myself, but I'm not, you know, that into it. But he's definitely studied it, and he's even visited and traveled. But there was even one job nearby for a mustard company, which, you know, people might be able to figure out what that is. So I think it's somewhat nearby. We're in an engineering firm. But he kept saying the name, it has an OE in it, and he kept putting an R there. And now I understand better probably why. I mean, if she's saying it this way for this, like philosopher type guy, I'm pretty sure. Is that right? Blah,
blah, blah. Yeah, he wrote yeah. Faust.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think is what he's most well known for.
Goethe, but spelled Goethe if people want to look it up. Yeah, and definitely, you know, German writer and statesman. But then what I found out, I put the quote into Google.
There you go.
Basil King is who the actual, apparently. This is misquote. She misquotes it.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Why did Cameron
have her misquote? She's not. That tells the people that actually know that she's really maybe not as smart. Or maybe something changed from the 70s to now. And this maybe I need to re-Google search and say, would someone in the 70s known would have believed that Goethe actually said this versus who we now know to have said it?
That's so Basil King.
I mean, and that's the only quote he's known for too. This Basil King.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm so curious now. I want to figure out like where the he was a Canadian writer.
Yeah, right.
I do not know any of his books. Interesting. Okay. He died in 1928. He was a clergyman who became a writer when he retired from the clergy. Okay, that's enough about Basil King. I'm going to close that.
So, and then she continues, it's not too late for you to become a person of substance, Russell.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice that she's saying his name. I think it's an actual emphasis that, you know, she really is just, you know, wanting to talk with him as a person.
Yeah. And that she was listening.
Yeah.
When he introduced himself and everything, too. Like, you know, I like this. I like the mom energy here of just being like, you have good potential to do something, you know. I think it's cute.
Then her line is, "Please get my son home safely," and she's glad that they spoke.
Yeah.
There's no response at that point from Russell. Yet he's really in this big state of shock, which goes on through to into the next minute. That's for sure. Well. But there's a little in the next scene that we jump to before this minute ends. There's a little something I need to say about that in a moment. But the one last little thing for this scene on the phone is that, you know, we barely see him start to, I think, motion to hang up the phone, but we hear her hang up the phone. We truly do know that the conversation is over when it cuts. Yeah, which I think is a good thing. Good bit
That's
of
a nice touch.
Work, you know, to make sure we get that they got that in there.
That's so funny. I just like how like stunned, sort of flabbergasted Russell is at the end of this minute.
And do you think it could be like that change in attitude that she had? I mean, you know, if she had just kept on with being pretty
really
upset with her or with him and Lane.
I think it would have been easier for him to brush it off if she hadn't taken the time to like have a sincere moment at the end of the conversation.
They both could have hung up by slamming their respective phones.
Yeah.
It is one way it could have easily ended. But like you said, it's that motherly instinct kind of thing that really kicks in for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a huge part of the movie, too, that I think some people often forget about this. You know, yes, okay, there's William and his new relationships with Russell and Penny. You know, music and the muse and, you know, and what is, you know, the fan perspective, so forth. But then it's the whole family thing. You know, there's the mother and the sister both.
Yeah.
Playing extremely important roles, as I think they did for Cameron.
It's fascinating. I really like all the people in this movie.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there isn't. I mean, even when we get someone pretty famous now coming in a few minutes, not too long, just three or four more, I think, roughly. I'm really famous today. I mean, at the point, you know, I mean, it's so much like the other. You know, we were just going through them just a few weeks ago, not that long. There was definitely only just a couple minutes ago for the Nick Swardston, as the Bowie fan that yells out, "It's Bowie." But before that, way before that, was another hotel scene. All these hotel scenes,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was the Eric Stone Street, and then even the kind of real actually more cameo type things, where it's, and he actually comes back in a little bit later too. Peter Frampton, you know, rock star of the 70s, huge rock star of the 70s, who helped out with some of the music. And I think that's probably the big reason, you know, they said, well, if you want to come on set, and, you know, then they put him in.
It's fun that they just like makeup. Have these guys around.
And they had him playing. It's more clear in the scene that's coming up, but in the one little scene, and, you know, he says, "Hi, Benny." And, you know, it's really quick before, but then it's a little more crucial later on.
Yeah.
But he does end up being the manager of the band that Frampton was in.
That's cool.
Frampton is playing his old manager.
Amazing. It's a fun time.
Oh. But, okay, so like I said, the scene cuts away, and we saw it once before, minute 27, where the band is in the huddle and they do this song. It actually starts out seemingly, I believe. I really can't find much more reference other than just all leading back to this movie. So, you know, if one of those other bands I gave you last minute had this song, I can't see Led Zeppelin having done this, but maybe one of the other three, more likely. Song and Pong, I think it's kind of its name. Those are the first three words that they sing. Song and Pong, it sounds like lots of fun. And there's definitely more to it next minute, and it's a piggyback ride.
And interesting. And
they kind of do it all. It's kind of more country-ish, so that makes it, I mean, that's I guess that's why I'm saying the other three bands besides Zeppelin, you know. But like I said, minute 27, we talked about it before, and I thought about going back and actually listening to what I said before, but just didn't get around to it.
That's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, and then also in the few seconds before we had the cut too, even in the scenes where it was on the Russell William phone side of things,
mm-hmm.
the song that we talked a bit about last minute, that did continue throughout most of this minute up until then, and there was some kind of pretty quick fade out, I'd say, but it was already so low in the mix, but it did get faded out. Didn't cut off and this start right away either. Interestingly faded out, which I mean, because it was apparently diegetic, but
okay,
because, you know, like I said, it would go away totally. I mean, I just couldn't hear it at all when it was, the shot was on Elaine.
I like this huddle. I like that Russell still looks uncomfortable.
So so that's the last little thing, right? And he's even looking over, kind of back, you know, back. It's, you know, I think it's so important, you know, the I've heard it a little bit before, but the you know, camera shots and you know where things are in the frame, you know, left to right for the majority of the world, you know, that reads left to right. it's an important thing. And he's looking back to the left, back in time, you know, so to speak. But then he does look forward at like the very last couple seconds, two, 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. But he's just, yeah, he still just has this stunned face. And we get the payoff of that after the subtle.
It's really funny.
And everyone else, and except for, of course, Ed, is singing. But
yeah.
William is so much more into it. You know, isn't as confused by it when we first kind of saw him joining. When he was asked to join, he said, hey, you got to get the enemy in here, I think, by Jeff. When it happened before. But he's definitely more into it.
Now he's sort of like part of their little huddle, which is cute. They've adopted him a little bit.
Yeah, really what Russell was saying, you know, the it's not that he's technically the best journalist, but he's the one that they like the best.
Yeah.
From last minute.
Yeah. That's a good question. You know, it was so important to them at the beginning that he like even knew who they were. Not only knew who they were, but knew enough to like compliment them. Call them out. And so like, you know, they seem to like having this kid around who legitimately is a fan of what they're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, gosh, when you hear Lester Bangs, I mean, he definitely, in the radio DJ booth there on the street when Williams were watching him. And,
yeah.
And he's just really tearing it to a couple of the bands, like the Doors. Mm-hmm. But praising the other ones, too. But, you know, If we could just get someone on the bit younger side that is as good, who could on the younger side of Philip Seymour Hoffman playing Lester Bangs in 2000, late 99, probably 2000, that, I mean, to have a prequel movie kind of from his point of view,
that'd be cool.
and how he got burned and why he was giving all this crazy advice. I would love
a Lester Bangs.
Yeah.
Like biopic or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there's like been documentary. There's definitely a documentary out there. I don't know if I've seen all of it. I think I've watched part, but let me track that down.
Interesting.
But you have any more notes that you want to tackle?
No, I think we kind of covered it. Yeah. Like I was saying, like even between this, like I just love the energy between Russell and Elaine on the phone. I think their conversation is maybe one of my favorite parts of this movie already. So when I saw that it was these minutes we were talking about, I was like, this is a fun dynamic. Mm-hmm. They have good energy between the two of them. I think every time they interact.
Yeah. Right.
That's
one of the biggest payoffs, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
They come into actual physical, close contact.
Yeah.
So great. I really appreciate you coming on for these couple, and hopefully there'll be a couple more maybe later on, and hopefully with Victoria too. Hopefully you get around to that.
That would be really fun. I'm going to try and
little watch party that you two do, I think, of different things at times.
Yeah, we haven't done it. We did it for Harry Potter at the beginning. I'm working on a different computer than I was using then, so I haven't done as much of the Discord stuff lately, but... Mm.
Can you tell us more though about your experience with the movie? I mean, when you first saw it.
So I first saw it, I was probably like 19 or 20. I was already going to Grossmont actually, taking programs in their creative writing department. And I had a buddy of mine, I worked at a movie theater at the time. And I had a buddy of mine who invited me over to just, like, hang out after work one day. Mm-hmm. And just threw this movie on. We were, like, having drinks together and just, like, watching this movie. And he was like, oh, I think you're really going to like this. And I immediately fell in love so much with, like, Russell's character because when I was a kid, I wanted to write. And my parents had, like, this idea of, like, well, this is the path we think you should be on.
Yeah.
And it was sort of easy for me to, like, kind of vicariously put myself in his shoes. Watching this and being like, wouldn't this be a cool time? I think I took like a history of rock music class at the time too. Mm-hmm. So just a lot of the music, a lot of the stuff was just fresh. And I think I watched it at the right time. But I don't revisit this one as often as I should. Every time I do, I'm like, God, I love this movie. I think it's very well done.
Yeah. Very interesting. That's yeah, the way you first experience movies, I think can lend a lot with how you feel about them later and whether or not you want to watch them again or repeatedly and different things like that. But.
You know, because it's always, especially when you like are trying to show someone something you think they'll like, there's always that pressure of like, oh, what if they don't like it? Or, oh, what if this doesn't go? And so it was just a really, it was really nice for him to put something on that I was like, oh, this is actually genuinely good. Because that was not always the case when I hung out with this guy.
Yeah, wow.
Just how it goes, you know? People have different tastes. That's good. I like it a lot.
Yeah. So hopefully down the road, we can do that. Until then, I want you to let people know, again, kind of, you know, maybe the other things you do. I mean, you know, I mean, I absolutely loved, you know, that you guys decided to do, Ferris Bueller because, I kind of gotten to understand, like, your sense, you know, on the Facebook group and what have you, the main one for the Minute Makers, what have you. And I loved it, and I listened to that whole thing. But I've listened to very little of Harry Potter because I really haven't seen those movies. Sure. And even the one time I was on for the second movie with my old co-host, Travis, those were the only minutes I had seen. And those are still the only minutes I've seen of that movie.
That's wild.
And I have since, I've essentially done like a 1.5 viewing of the first movie, though.
Sure.
Since then, I think. I think so, so.
They're, you know... I have a weird relationship with the Harry Potter movies. I mean, it's been even kind of more strained lately. The thought of going back and doing more Harry Potter stuff amidst all
this tough. Yeah.
J.K. Rowling controversy. Uh-huh. I think we're just going to hold off for now. Yeah. We've talked about doing other shows. We've got something upcoming in the new year over at Dueling Genre. So that'll be a good time, but I can't talk about it yet.
Sure. Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. And then I've got I work at a bookstore, called Mysterious Galaxy. We're a sci-fi fantasy genre fiction specific store, and I do a podcast over there called Galaxy Not So Far Away, where on Tuesdays we talk about new books that are coming out and things that we're excited about and like events and authors stuff that we're hosting. And then on Thursdays, not as consistently, we were doing it every other week, but our schedules have been weird. We do just like genre related episodes. We did a Halloween one last week. A couple weeks ago, I guess. I don't know when this is going to air. We've done a time travel episode. We did an episode about magic, which has always been a good time. And that just has rotating booksellers from the store that I drag on to talk to me. So people can find that at Mysterious Galaxy. No, mistgalaxy.com. It's MYST Galaxy.
Yeah.
And then I have my baseball show, which I think I've talked enough about at this point.
definitely the one that's most interesting to me. Like bookstore shenanigans, that is up my alley. I think I told you once before that I was at a bookstore. I worked at a bookstore just for three or four months.
Sure.
Right after college, before I figured out where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do, and so forth. But and that was even with you talking about going to watch movies and you know hanging out with other person or more really in my case there was like two or three instances where a few of us. In the bookstore did that. It's one person's place or another.
I miss doing that.
And so that was the two movies I remember the most, if we did do it a three or fourth time, I'm not even sure, but the two movies I remember the most that we watched were Labyrinth and Dogma.
Ooh, those are fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think for the bookstore we did like a Halloween thing last year, but I think every time we've done a Halloween thing, it's just been Hocus Pocus and like Paranorman maybe. I think we watched The Mummy last year because one of my coworkers had never seen it. So good times.
Yeah.
I think between the movie theater and the bookstore, people that are into fiction and into storytelling end up having conversations that lead to stuff like this.
That is, Well, thank you so much. I need to now let people know a little bit about, the network I'm on, pantheonpodcast.com is where you can go to hear just about right around 50, I believe, at this point, other podcast shows, all about mostly rock and roll, all about music, that's for sure. Some little bit of country and rap and what have you here and there sprinkled throughout, but mostly rock. A lot of great things like... Definitely also one of the other big things is the couple shows that kind of have a good bit to do with Band-Aids, or as you know, we better know them as groupies. We even have Miss Pamela DeBar, who is one of the people that make that kind of went into being how Cameron Crowe came up with Penny Lane.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I suggest people check out all those shows there at pantheonpodcast.com. And just a couple socials for this show is the Facebook page. You can find at facebook.com/almostfamousminute. And we have our group there, which is called the Band-Aids Listener Society. And on Twitter and Instagram, you can find us at Almost Famous Min. Had to do the little shortening there. So thanks again, Gary. And like I said, down the road, hopefully Victoria too.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm gonna make that happen. We're gonna watch this movie and I'll drag her on with me.
Thanks so much for doing these 2 minutes with us. Next week we should have a different guest. That'll be minute 74.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
thank you. So until then, it's all happening.
It's all happening.
I am a golden god! Yeah! Yes, you are!
And I was born in the backseat of a Greyhound bus, rolling down Highway 41.
You know the Queen of Hearts is always your best bet.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.